true Renaissance lawyer and bar leader, former state bar president. He's done many different things in his life, including starting his career as a Roger Trainer clerk on the California Supreme Court and teaching at USC. I was a student of his in my first year civil procedure course, and he was pretty good. The subject of the lunch presentation is the very difficult issue of how to promote international arbitration in California in the face of at least one difficult California Supreme Court decision, which those outside of California point to as an impediment to California being an effective seat of arbitration. And Howard and a group have been working on that for a long time and have had, will have had by the end of the year a success, I think, changing the landscape in California. And so Howard and his panel, whom he will introduce, are going to talk about opportunities in California for it being promoted as an international arbitration within California.
Thank you so much, Rich. Thank you as always. It's very generous. And thank you for your leadership in putting all this together over so many years. What we're really talking about here is that California legal culture is changing. You know, areas not only have laws and rules and lawyers and judges, but laws have culture. California has had an interesting law culture up until about 10 years ago. And basically, that law culture was completely exclusionary from everyone outside California. The California bar exam has always been the most difficult bar exam. It has a higher cut score than any other bar exam. There's no reciprocity of any kind in terms of practice with any other state, despite the fact that now 28 or 29 states have uniform bar exam. So California, the basis of California law culture, up until about 10 years ago, was we've got to keep people out. And that demonstrated itself in many ways. I mean, the state was booming. The number of lawyers increased from about 50 years ago, it was about 30,000 lawyers, the population 15 million. Now there are about 200,000, 40 million, 2.5 times the number per capita. But it was a boom. And the California legal profession wanted to remain exclusive. Everyone, their attitude was, everyone wants to come here. We're going to make it very, very tough. That changed about 10 years ago, I think, for a variety of reasons, including international firms coming to California, but also, I think, because people began to realize we're in a different world today. We said, sixth largest economy in the world, and now California has to reach out. That culture has to change. The case that created the problem here in terms of international practice was decided in 1998. It was close to the inflection tipping point about that realization. It was the Bierbauer case, as everyone knows it. The 32nd version is that a New York lawyer came to California to appear as counsel in an arbitration in California. After the arbitration, wanted to collect fees. Supreme Court of California ultimately, after much litigation, said no. Appearing as counsel in an arbitration is the practice of law in California. You're not a member of the California Bar. You're not going to get your fee. The key holding, appearing as counsel in arbitration is the practice of law, basically excluded every non-U.S. lawyer from coming to California. Because even though a system was set up through the Supreme Court, the State Bar, which essentially permitted pro arbitri appearances from U.S. lawyers in California arbitrations, there was no provision for non-U.S. lawyers to appear. Jeff Castillo wrote a definitive article on this in the L.A. County Bar Book. And so that's what Bierbauer did. And it was an expression of the exclusionary culture. That started to change about 10 years ago. And about 4 years ago, it changed enough so that some of us thought we could solve it simply. We were wrong. It couldn't be solved simply. But we did get, through the California Senate unanimously, a bill to change the rules of appearance in California to be the unsatrial rule, which is that anyone could appear in an arbitration. The Senate passed it unanimously. And the approach in terms of the change in culture was not to bring it to the legislature as a law bill International arbitration was the name, but it was sold to the legislature as a jobs bill, as something for the economy. The economists had done studies of what international arbitration meant to New York, and we brought it to the Senate and said, this is a jobs bill, it has to do with the economy. The Judicial Council of California had initially supported it, but then for very good reasons thought it required some more studies, so though it got through the Senate, it did not get through the Assembly. And then, a little over a year ago, the Supreme Court appointed a working group to look at this issue, and it came in with a recommendation that now is embodied in the bill we'll talk about, Senate Bill 766, which basically permits lawyers who are members, who are qualified and admitted to practice in their home countries in a recognized way, to come to California without the necessity of broad reach application to appear in arbitration. And so we will talk about both what that means, but equally important how, and right now that bill has passed the Senate, again unanimously. It's in the Assembly. There's no known opposition. So we are hoping that it passes the Assembly with no opposition and is signed by the governor, become effective January 1, 2019. Will transform the ability of California to host and to receive international arbitrations. But clearly more will need to be done to build California as an international arbitration center. The people we have on the panel, we could not have two more qualified people but to speak. Dan Kokey is a retired former justice of the California Court of Appeals, and he was the one that drafted the California International Arbitration Act. It is his statute, he's the drafter of it. He practices extensively in this area. He was also appointed by the Supreme Court to be chair of the working group that worked and came in with the recommendation. Maria Chenet, who is a partner at Baker McKenzie in San Francisco, has demonstrated that as much as lawyers talk about the need for Bierbauer to appeal, it is possible to build a world-renowned international arbitration practice in California without any change of the law. And Maria has done that at Baker McKenzie. We have some other members of the committee here. Jeff DeSteele was part of the committee, Steve Smith was part of the committee. I don't know if everybody else. Yes. Bob Lutz from Southwestern was part of the committee. So that's what we're going to talk about. What happens, so background, Dan, we'll talk about the background of SB 766, the history, how we got there. Maria will talk about how we can use it as a base to build international in California. And we will finish that at a time to have conversations with you about what your views are and what should be done so that California can become, which it should be, the practices of certainly in the Pacific Rim, South and Central America, I mean, a major center of international commercial arbitration. So, Dan, it's your
turn. All right. Well, thank you, Howard. So, I'm going to go into a little bit more depth as to what Howard just spoke about to give you a better sense as to how California put itself in the position of actually not permitting either foreign or out of state attorneys to represent their clients in an international arbitration in California, and why, as Howard mentioned, we're increasingly optimistic that that is going to dramatically change. And it's interesting that it's actually exactly 30 years ago that in 1988, another attorney and myself, Al Gobert, with some assistance, as I recall, from Bob Lutz and Jack McDermott at Loyola, decided to put together an UNCTRAL model law for California to adopt to make California a more friendly place for international arbitration cited in the state. So Al and I took the UNCTRAL model law. We basically used the law, but we adapted it to suit the California Code of Civil Procedure. And one of the things we did, which is very logical, but you're going to see in a minute, how this spawned some of the problem. One of the things we did is California was going to adopt the UNCTRAL model law. We couldn't have California's domestic arbitration law apply. So we put a provision in our UNCTRAL model law that said that Code of Civil Procedure sections 1280 to 1284.2, which were the sections involving compelling arbitration, appointing the arbitrator, and some of California's discovery provisions, which are part of its domestic legal structure. But those provisions didn't apply to an international arbitration contract. So our Unsatrel model law adaptation for California excluded those domestic law provisions. And it was particularly important because, as California practitioners know, California domestic arbitration, a motion to compel arbitration may permissibly be denied if there is related litigation where it makes sense to have the litigation go first. So California does not have domestically a clean obligation to compel arbitration. So we excluded that. Then you go exactly 10 years from the enactment of that statute. Oh, and I, by the way, just a quick anecdote on this. A couple years later, I was introducing to a group of international arbitration specialists the governor of the state who had signed that California version of the Unsatrel model law, George Duke-Machin. And I went through his achievements as governor, and then I said, but, you know, the achievement that you're most known for, governor, is your signing the California International Arbitration Statute. And Duke-Machin turned to me and said, well, you know, thank you, Dan, for that introduction, but I have no recollection of signing, which was lesson number one. Sometimes going under the radar is a successful strategy for legislative success. In any event, 10 years after that's enacted, as Howard mentioned, you've got the Bierbrauer case. And one thing I want to mention about the Bierbrauer case, which I think is interesting from a jurisprudential, judicial thinking standpoint, is that it was an easy case for the California Supreme Court to say was the unauthorized practice of law with respect to an arbitration in California. Because Bierbrauer was a New York firm performing services in California for a California corporation in connection with a California-based arbitration that was governed substantively and procedurally by California law. So the Supreme Court is the ultimate authority for oversight of the practice of law in California. So if you've got someone from another state who's engaged in interpreting California law, basically litigating in the form of an arbitration in California for a California corporation, it makes it much easier for the court to say, well, we think that this may be the practice of law. And indeed, since Bierbrauer, there are other states that, before had not considered arbitration to be the practice of law, have followed Bierbrauer. But of course, once the California Supreme Court had said that we will not carve out arbitration from the practice of law in California, and therefore an out-of-state lawyer practicing arbitration in California must be licensed by the state of California, that required the legislature to immediately do some sort of fix. They weren't thinking about foreign attorneys, because this was a domestic arbitration case. So what did the legislature do? They immediately created a pro hoc vici process for out-of-state lawyers to represent clients in an arbitration in California. And of course, you know, legislature gets involved. What does the legislature do? Well, regulate. So it, you know, provided, all right, you've got to make an application for pro hoc vici status. Two, you've got to associate a California lawyer with you. You can't do it alone. Three, that application has got to go to the state bar, to the arbitrator, to all the parties and their counsel. And four, the arbitrator has to approve your pro hoc vici application. The legislative counsel, when he or she did this and helped draft this, stuck the provision right in the middle of the California Domestic Arbitration Act, the precise provisions that 10 years earlier, Al Gobert and I had excluded from the international arbitration statute. So the pro hoc vici provision for out-of-state lawyers did not apply to an international arbitration in California, which meant that for a California international arbitration, there was no way for an out-of-state lawyer to represent a client because Bierbrauer said arbitrations were the practice of law, and this legislative fix only applied to domestic arbitration because the international arbitration statute excluded it. And then no one was even thinking about foreign attorneys. So you've got the problem, and the problem grew to the point that 19 other jurisdictions or states in the United States allowed foreign attorneys to handle arbitration. New York among them, Texas allows it, District of Columbia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Illinois, Florida, Georgia. So you now have a situation where, although, as mentioned at the previous panel, California is an independent country, would be the sixth largest GNP in the world, and far surpasses New York. New York handles 200% more international arbitrations administered by the ICDR, ICC, and JAMS combined. New York handles 200% more of those arbitrations than California. And in fact, Florida actually handles 50% more than the arbitrations, international arbitrations, handled in California. So it was a huge problem. Howard doesn't give himself any credit when he talked about the first round of trying to solve this. Howard was able to get the state bar to endorse this UNCTRAL method of allowing anyone to represent a party in an international arbitration. As Howard said, that bill was stopped in the assembly. And it was stopped in 2014. And so the group of us who were trying to promote international arbitration in California, we're trying to think, well, what can we do to try and solve this? So I ultimately went to the Chief Justice of California, who was very reform-minded, very open-minded, as I would say her predecessor was reform-minded as well. In any event, I went to her, raised the issue. She suggested that I send a letter to the court. So in 2016, I drafted a letter to the Chief Justice in December 2016. She shared it with the full court, and the full court approved setting up a working group to address the issue of whether foreign and out-of-state attorneys should be permitted to represent their clients in international arbitrations held in California. Of course, having written the letter, I got the lucky draw of the straw to chair the working group. So we were officially appointed in February, as I recall, of 2017. The court wanted, actually, us to get a report out very quickly. We got one out in about a month and a half time. And what I realized as soon as I was appointed that we were going to have to do four things if we were going to be successful in moving forward in authorizing foreign and out-of-state attorneys to practice international arbitrations in California. One is we were going to have to strongly make the policy argument why foreign and out-of-state attorneys should be permitted, without being licensed in California, to handle international arbitrations in California. So I knew we had to make a major policy argument. Two, I felt that whatever we did, we had to pick a authorization that had some uniformity or familiarity with practitioners. In other words, we could not have a California-centric solution that no one had seen before. We really needed to have something that had greater familiarity and thus would increase the comfort level that this sort of authorization would work and allow foreign and out-of-state attorneys to practice international arbitrations in California. Three, I realized that whatever we did, we were going to have to satisfy the concerns of the state bar and the Supreme Court with respect to their oversight of the practice law of California. There was no way that whatever solution we had was going to get through the legislature unless the oversight bodies were satisfied. And indeed, the Supreme Court had appointed liaisons from the Supreme Court and the state bar to our working group. And I knew that we needed to satisfy their concerns. And then finally, I knew, in addition to doing all that, familiarity of the legislation, the policy arguments, satisfying the Supreme Court and state bar, we had to do one more thing. And that is, we had to address the politics of the legislature, or we weren't going to get this. And those who are based in California know that there's been a long-standing debate in the California legislature about the propriety and value of arbitration over litigation with respect to consumer disputes and employment disputes. And my view is, all right, we've got to avoid getting basically involved in that dispute. We've got to cleanly avoid that. So through the work of, as Howard said, a number of people in this room, we debated, developed a proposal that ultimately accomplished the four things I knew we had to accomplish, which was one, we took a rule that was known to others and was not a California-centric rule, and we took the American Bar Association's recommendation for a model rule of temporary practice by foreign lawyers. And we used that as the base for our California legislation. Two, we provided that the foreign or out-of-state attorney that appeared in the international arbitration would be subject to the California laws governing the conduct of attorneys, which is what New York does as well, so that it's not breaking new ground, and to also assuage the concerns of the State Bar, we provided that the State Bar would do an annual report that specified any disciplinary complaints that occurred during international arbitration so that the Supreme Court kept abreast of this. And we also gave it the authority to refer to the out-of-state or foreign attorney's jurisdiction any disciplinary complaints. So there obviously any out-of-state attorney or foreign attorney, there is a licensing authority or an authority in their own jurisdiction that authorized them to practice law. Our California State Bar would be able to refer complaints to that attorney's jurisdiction that authorized or licensed that attorney in the first place. So that provided comfort for the state's oversight bodies. And then we excluded consumer disputes, disputes with healthcare providers, and employment disputes, and but we excluded from our exclusions where the employment dispute primarily involved rights to intellectual property or misappropriation of intellectual property, which are issues that arise in international arbitrations. But we kept out the non-intellectual property employment disputes and consumer disputes. So with that, we got the majority leader of the state Senate to be the author of the bill, and indeed he had been the author of Howard's earlier effort. And as Howard mentioned, it's now passed out the Senate. It's on its way to the Assembly Judiciary Committee. We have no opposition, so no one in this room better say anything negative about this. So I will just close by noting that we're nonetheless, you know, at the mercy of the legislature on this, but you know, our fingers are crossed, things are looking good. And so I can only end by quoting the words of former Judge Robert Bork, who said that being at the mercy of legislative majorities is merely another way of describing the basic American plan, representative democracy.
Maybe a quote he wanted to reject. Interesting enough, maybe the first time we did this in 2014, we basically sent two letters into the Senate Judiciary Committee. Dan talked about the opposition to arbitration, mostly based on consumer arbitration. So the fear was that the plaintiff's bar, because it contained the words arbitration, would oppose this. So we sent in two letters, one from Dan and one from my former partner, Tom Girardi, usually regarded as the leading political power in the plaintiff's bar. And the Senate Judiciary staff said they couldn't think of another single thing that Dan Colby from Gibson Dunn and Tom Girardi would agree on. This had to be a great idea. Maria?
Thank you, Howard. Thank you, Dan.
Overview.
glass half full type of person, so I want to give you a sense first before we talk about all the work we need to do of how far we've come. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my personal experience just briefly coming to California over 20 years ago to practice in international arbitration. I began my practice in New York, and there I practiced as counsel in Iran claims tribunal cases for about 3 years, and then decided I wanted to move to California. And so I contacted a legal recruiter, and I said, I'd like to come to California to practice international arbitration. What are my options? And she said, I have no idea what you're talking about. There's no one out here doing that kind of work. And I said, well, I can't be. Introduced me to the largest litigation departments in California. Someone's got to be doing it. Ultimately, I had a choice between Brobeck and Forster, and I made the right choice. And I took a position as an associate with Morrison & Forster. And even as the largest litigation department in California, I was told, you know, you're not going to be able to build an international practice out here, but we have a lot of cases that are going to the courts that deal with consumer arbitration. At that time, institutions like Bank of America were adopting arbitration as their mandatory dispute resolution mechanism with their customers, and so in those early years, I worked on those cases. But things slowly started to change, and international arbitration cases did start coming through our doors. Actually, eventually I worked with Cedric, and although he said earlier he doesn't listen to people who are younger than he is, he sometimes listened to me when we worked together. And so the practice slowly but steadily began to grow. This about 10 years ago, when arbitration really started to pick up steam, I think that's when we started to see some competition for the most popular seats for arbitration. And this is a different kind of economic competition than what we spoke about this morning. And I think this is a healthy form of competition because it's competition within the arbitration world. And so we saw, and we see it even more now, all different cities around the world competing to become the center or one of the most popular centers for international arbitration. And several of those cities, even some who had similar restrictions to ours, like Singapore, they had also a restriction on foreign representation. They changed that law, and we all know, fast forward today, and we all know what a popular seat Singapore is for arbitration. So it can be done, and I can tell you that in the first decade when I practiced here in California, we've never had a conference like this and have a turnout like this. So we've made progress. So what needs to be done? If we And I am optimistic that the bill will pass. If it passes, Dan tells us that we'll know that that is the case by August 31st. And then the governor will be required to sign it at the latest by the end of September. So we all need to start thinking now and preparing now and looking at lessons learned from these other jurisdictions who have succeeded. And that does include New York. New York has invested tremendously in an international arbitration center, in a marketing campaign, in public relations. I went online and I found that the New York State Bar Association has a brochure, Choose New York for International Arbitration. About 10 pages long. They have an endorsement in front of it from their chief judge and from Mayor Bloomberg. And then all the reasons why it's a favorable seat for international arbitration. Now, we here in California, I think, are well positioned to compete notwithstanding these obstacles that we're working to overcome, and that's because I think we have many advantages already, and I just want to remind us all of what some of them are. First and foremost, we're home to a large number of actual and potential and steadily growing arbitration users. They are right here, a resident in our state, and they'd like to stay here to resolve their disputes. I mean, so there's a inherent incentive for users to choose California, and those of you who are familiar with what's happening in the tech industry in Northern California, we are seeing a real shift to embrace international arbitration that we haven't seen for many years. And I would say that that's been occurring in the last, I'd say, five years or so. And largely through education, and I don't know if Gary Benton is here, but I'd like to recognize Gary because he's contributed greatly to that with the Silicon Valley Center that he has established. They're doing tremendous work, educational work, with technology companies so that they can understand the benefits of international arbitration. Some other advantages that we have are, of course, our positioning in the Americas as a gateway to Asia Pacific. We do have a sophisticated and well-trained legal community here who's familiar with arbitration, a sophisticated judiciary. We have well-developed jurisprudence in contractual and intellectual property disputes, and we have a deep supply of other service providers, hotels, restaurants, and the like. And of course, the natural beauty and cosmopolitan character and great weather we have in our state doesn't hurt. So what are our challenges and where does all this negative perception come from? It's not only this restriction on foreign representation. Those early cases that I worked on that I mentioned to you relating to consumer arbitration, our competitors, not only our competitors, some were just confused about it, seize upon that and say, well, this is, our courts are not friendly to international arbitration, and they conflate consumer arbitration, domestic arbitration with international arbitration. But I am confident that if we as a community research our cases in California and look at the statistics for enforcement, number of cases where people have tried to challenge international arbitration awards in our courts and how many times they've succeeded, we will compare very favorably to any jurisdiction in the United States. And so I think that's one task that's on our to-do list. Another reason I think for the negative perception of California comes, maybe surprisingly, from arbitrators. Particularly arbitrators in New York, who often complain to me about our disclosure requirements. And I've heard them sometimes say to me, I just don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with your rules. I don't want to come to California. I worry I won't get it right. But the reality, once again, is there's a distinction between the requirements in the domestic arbitration space and in the international arbitration space. And those requirements don't apply to international arbitration under our code. Now, that's not to say you shouldn't disclose. I agree completely with Gary. You need to disclose everything. Yeah, I mean, you don't want it to come back and haunt you later on at the enforcement stage, so you should be disclosing. But I think the worry about that is extremely overstated, and I think that's something we too need to address. Now, how do we do this? We need a strategic and coordinated messaging and marketing campaign. I think it needs to involve both the North and the South, the entire state. And I think, again, we can look to a number of things that New York and Singapore and Miami have done and decide what we think will work in this state and what our judiciary would embrace and support. Eventually, we should look to establishing better facilities. We have some now. I've never had a shortage of conference facilities in California for arbitrations. But really, much of it is, you know, perception. And for perception, you need to effectively message. And that means we all need to work together and start soon, early, so that we can seize on that opportunity once that bill passes. To send that message out to everyone within in the international arbitration community and to all the stakeholders. Now, I'm not a PR expert, but I know that this has worked for others, and I'm confident it'll work for us. But I really would love to take some time during this session to hear from all of you about your ideas as to how we can most effectively do that. So I'm going to stop.
Thank you, Maria. Maria asked the right question, and so we'd like to have a conversation. There are a couple of other areas that are not just the executive community, and then we'll talk about this. You know, Los Angeles, Southern California, has a higher population outside the home country of 60 countries in the world. There are more Vietnamese in Los Angeles than in any place in the world except Vietnam. And you can go down the list, more Persians than any place except Iran. And 60 countries, and that's true. And all those communities have relationships, family relationships, business relationships. And there's a real educational thing that has to be done as part of what Marie's talking about. In those communities, with the businesses and the lawyers who serve them, that they're now, there's no, should be no objection now to lawyers outside the United States making Los Angeles or San Francisco or other places in California the seat and venue, because those lawyers can now come in here if it comes to the arbitration. Also, what's recently happened with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I think, is going to open a whole area. I mean, the other countries, the U.S. tragically pulled out. All the other countries have signed it. But without the intellectual property protections that the U.S. so painstakingly fought to put in, and that, I think, is going to open up a whole area of IP arbitration and dispute resolution as well. So having added that, I want to thank Maria for asking the questions. We'd like to hear, what are your views? How do we build? What do we do? How do we build California to what it should be, which is a major center of arbitration that competes with the other centers around the world? Gary?
I'm going to be very brief and just wanted to make two points. One, we should all really applaud the working committee, particularly Dan, Howard, and others who have worked on this. The proposal that you have in front of the state legislature is the best possible, and it's really going to do wonders. So thank you very much for that.
You know, Gary, before you go on, because not a good question on the committee was mentioned, and I think we ought to mention everyone. So, well, I think we didn't say Abe Fisher, so we missed him, and I don't think we mentioned Cedric Chow. So I think we got Jeff, right? We got Bob,
Sally,
and Steve,
Sally,
right?
Harple.
And I think that may
Jeff Dostiel.
We got
Fred Bennett.
Yeah. Oh, Fred Bennett.
Steve.
Yep. Yeah. Steve Smith. Yes.
Well, you did all the work, Dan.
Anyway, Gary, it's an amazing job. So thank you. My other quick second point, and it's a quick point because I agree 1,000% with everything Maria has said. And as many of you know, I've been a bit of a rabble-rouser lately on saying we need to put together a California International Arbitration Initiative, exactly as Maria is discussing. I think there is no question that the strength that we have in California in terms of economics, in our industries, in IP, entertainment in LA, technology, agriculture, those are great opportunities for us to market. And our real opportunity, I think, is Asia, where in contrast to the institutions that have risen lately and been so successful, we here have a very strong rule of law, common law traditions that I think can be very useful in terms of providing opportunities for companies in California and those abroad who want to have matters handled here. So I think the concept of an effort jointly between Northern California and Southern California to build a marketing effort, and along with that, eventually some sort of conference-like facility is phenomenal. So thank you again all very much.
Rich,
is there some kind of an existing working group between Southern and Northern California arbitration interested parties that is dealing with this issue, or should one be created?
We don't have one yet, although I have to say Gary did send around an email just this past month to initiate that effort. And it's not an effort that's intended to exclude anyone. So if you're interested in that, Gary, I'm
Richard
sorry, but I'm going to tell them to contact
so
you.
Busy, you didn't see it.
No, I got the email.
Yes.
So should we formalize this in some way and put together a group that will meet sometime in the near future to start talking about this in a smaller group than this?
Sure. And certainly the person who suggested that should be.
USC or JAMS would be glad to host.
A couple comments. I just wanted to share sort of two important things that happened in the 80s and 90s in this state with respect to mediation with a little potential spillover of arbitration. I was one of the first mediators for the Wellington Asbestos Facility, and so I had a number of very large, as I mentioned earlier, mediators come here to Los Angeles, and we didn't have Rich's wine, but we met for about 2 years a very large insurance dispute in some hotels in West LA, and I began at UCLA, and then I decided conflict of interest to get off the campus. And it had unbelievable spillover effects because there were a lot of lawyers that came to that were initially hostile to the whole ADR process in asbestos litigation. Plaintiff's lawyers, insurance lawyers who kind of wanted to keep it in the courts. And they had such a wonderful experience. It's one of the best efforts I ever had as an educator. Because after that one was over, all the lawyers and the participants in that particular case said, we love the weather, we love the wine. Hotel started to send free wine because I was having, you know, 30 lawyers and parties come and stay in the hotel once a month for 2 years. So the hotels were making a lot of money. They started to send us, I could do a whole session on the use of food in arbitrations and mediations, but the hotels started to send free wine, and I actually believe that the atmosphere of the sun shining and people coming from cold, dark, the east and the west, investigations, actually, you know, let the sun shine in to resolve the dispute. So it is partially getting a few successful cases of important either law firms or parties and multinational, whoever's arbitrating, to come and have a very good experience. That's number one. Number two, though, was the fact that there was substantive law working on our favor here. California, although having the Brobacker case and having hostile to consumer arbitration, had one of the first confidentiality protections for mediation in the evidence code here in California. And so all of a sudden, a whole bunch of very good lawyers in other parts of the country started to want to mediate here. Now a lot of the other states have similar laws, but there was considered to be a legal environment that was very pro-mediation because of the protections in the evidentiary code now being reconsidered for a whole bunch of other reasons. That actually gave this state a reputation as being a good place to mediate. So while we talk about the marketing and the sunshining and all that kind of stuff, I think there's also something perhaps about our closeness to Asia and all that. We should also look at the whatever our substantive rules are, our law that would protect or not protect arbitration. And as you say, Maria, the really crucial effort here will be to separate international arbitration with what's going on in the consumer and employment area, because I'm very familiar with that issue too. And so someone needs to think about a strategy for how to separate those two. Both substantively, legally, and also in terms of all the other things you're talking about.
I think, Carrie, that has effectively happened because the plaintiffs' organizations, CALA, CAOC, were consulted, and they understand that just because the word arbitration and the fact they have come to see this after discussions as a major growth opportunity for the plaintiffs' bar as well.
Next up, journalists, though. The journalists do not get out.
Great.
So a couple comments. I mean, just echo the thanks for the hard work and just to put a punctuation, exclamation point on that. If you go to an international arbitration conference overseas, and first of all, you say you're from California. First of all, Californians are rare. People are a little surprised. But generally, the first comment is, oh, you're from that crazy state. You know, this is a big black eye on us. And fortunately, most people drafting contracts have no idea this law exists. So we're still getting a decent number of arbitrations. The ones we're losing are those huge cases with sophisticated lawyers. And a single case like that is worth like 100, you know, little cases in terms of the economic impact. Second, yeah, to promote ourselves as a center, as Maria said, one thing is natural because we have all these businesses here. But actually, if you make it as a center like Singapore or, you know, Switzerland or whatever, you're attracting tons of cases that have nothing to do with California. I mean, if it's, let's say, a business in the East Coast in Asia, California is sort of in between, you know, so that's there. Related to that, yeah, I think we need more. It's great, as Maria said, that we're having more conferences. We should have one conference every 4 or 5 years in California, or every 2 or 3 years, and then maybe once a year. Now, the Google conference, of course, also, shout out to you guys, Rich and Eldred. I mean, this is now an institution, you know, and we have 2 or 3 a year now. That's great, but we need to get out there. We need to be overseas, too. And we need to start, you know, moving up in organizations, you know, maybe future, make a bid for, you know, ICA or, you know, IDA or, you know, whatever it else is. I mean, that's a little down the ways. But last thing, just to share a little anecdote, though, I think it is really clearly in the interest to work together, as Rich suggested, because this benefits us all. I was born and raised in California. In 2000, I moved to Korea to work at Kim and Chong with EY here. When I went to Korea, and we went to, EY and I went to a conference in Hong Kong or something in 2001 or two, and we said we're from Korea. And Chris said, huh? We never saw anybody here from Korea. I mean, Korea was totally not on the radar screen. But within 10 years, Korea was famous. And why? Because all these law firms worked together, either competitors, worked together, and, you know, it's the old thing, if the sea rises, everybody rises. And it was supposed to be really hard to break into international arbitration. But I think it's basically, if we all work together, we can do it. I mean, we have all the resources. But this law is absolutely critical. It was very embarrassing, you know. And people say that. They say, well, yeah, but people do it anyway, and, you know, nobody gets caught. But, you know, we are lawyers.
So, I heard someone at a conference, lawyer from outside the United States, say, you know, if you do this, you'll go to jail, because it technically is a misdemeanor in the California Penal Code to practice law without a license. So technically, people were pulling out that provision and saying, you know, it's a misdemeanor, you can go to jail. That was the level of antagonism.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Peter? One thing I think that we can all do is learn from what others have done. There are, you know, there has been this proliferation of other new centers, and I know the state of Georgia took a run at it a few years ago, in part by bashing California. And I don't know that they've succeeded, but others like Singapore have. So what can we learn from those, the positive experiences and the negative experiences of other places that have tried to establish themselves?
Agreed. And one thing, I mean, you said there's a lot of bashing of California, and there is. And I think what that means for all of us, those of us who are invested in getting an accurate perception out there of California, is exercise a little bit of your advocacy skills. I mean, go out there armed with the facts. And again, I think we need to wait until this bill hopefully is passed. But arm yourself with that information and go out. It's sometimes the most sophisticated in the arbitration community that require the most persuasion, because they're invested, of course, in their own jurisdictions. But everybody's going to have to do it.
As a friendly New Yorker, I would say that one thing that will contribute to the sense of reliability in California over time is to be able to point to your courts, and not only that they haven't caused trouble, but maybe over time you can get judges designated as judges to handle, you know, motions or other applications in connection with these arbitrations, because that's an area where in New York the uncertainty as to who the judge would be for really forward, you know, far-sighted arbitrators or arbitration counsel has sometimes been an issue, and we've paid close attention to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me just say that, you know, one of the things that we should consider and explore is having a specialized judge designated. I know New York has done that. Miami, I hadn't realized that Miami had done it, but I, in preparing for today, found this article in Law 360, Miami builds international arbitration shops with a new arbitration court.
You also want to have conferences here.
Yes.
You want to have more conferences like this, which call attention to your audience.
Yes. And you know, the conferences, I think as Grant mentioned, I mean, we have annual a lot of activity now here. What we need is for all of you to turn out.
Yeah, people like to come. If you invite
institutions
people,
will come back, and host them on an annual basis if there's a tournament.
Not only do they like to come, but most people have kids in college here.
Your grandparents are better because that lasts longer.
Someone here really wants to speak.
Thank you. And the many universities at California, such as USC, they also they provide some ADR programs like LLM or MDR in ADR. And actually, these programs host many students from different countries. So a survey probably among those students about the international arbitration culture in their country of origin would give some insight what could make California that to become an international arbitration center. Because each country has different international arbitration culture. So what is probably right, a marketing project right for Europe would be probably right for another country. So it's probably getting information from them about their about the culture of the international arbitration in their country of origin might give some insight how to proceed with the marketing.
We have some of the best, I think, law school ADR programs out here, including this one. And I also think that our culture is in California is an innovative one. And that's a perfect match for ADR, because ADR, as Carrie made very clear during our discussion today, offers so much opportunity for innovation. And I think we need to connect those dots.
Thank you. We are at the witching hour. Let's take a look.
Yes. Add a couple of points. One is I agree with the point that we probably need some.
Peter, we'll call on.
That we probably need a designated judge, and that's going to go a long way, frankly. I think that assuming this bill passes, that'll be our next project. We probably need a clearinghouse of information that people can go to get some comfort level about the international arbitration climate here. And then if we do that, I also think that we could probably get the governor's office to designate a representative of the state on behalf of its international commercial arbitration practice, who can then go out to conferences and spread the word. But having a governor's representative, which would give that person some stature, would allow that person to speak on behalf of California.
Peter and Cedric, and then we'll
have both CPR and the ICC out of New York are now making regular forays to the West Coast, meeting with the law firms to promote the use of their services, not just California-based arbitrations, but arbitrations all over the country. Have they weighed in on this at all?
Oh, absolutely.
They're providing the support.
They are providing support, and I can tell you the ICC comes now every year.
Oh, yeah.
The ICDR, we just set up the California Advisory Committee this past month. Everyone recognizes the potential here. I mean, and largely because, notwithstanding our problems existing right now in the legal framework, we are already increasing steadily in numbers, and with the industries in California embracing arbitration more and more, everyone sees what the future holds.
Henry?
You know, one of the best ways to increase arbitration is kind of here is actually it's in our control. So I think people in the law firms advise their clients on speakers mutual clauses, and maybe we're also moving to mutual, saying, well, you can be here, you can be there, but I think just take a little bit more and say, well, you know, you'd be much more convenient here, make them travel here, you have more bargaining leverage to put California into science. And then the other side's objection could be, well, I don't know if the courts in California, state or federal, are supportive of arbitration. And that's where the proposal, then your ideas of having a rule change or whatever it would take to have a specialized court that would handle such challenges, arbitration awards, would be good, because I think if federal judges, you know, pretty well versed, the state court judges, it's a little more haphazard because the people do different specialties. So, I guess, and that can change quickly. And I've been advising clients more and more, if you want your leverage, put in California. In terms of here on May 1, the ICC will be in San Francisco at DLA Piper's offices to have a all-day sort of a two-thirds of the day conference. So come.
And then they're probably going to be at, there may be at Latham's offices the next day or two.
Well, still working on everything and everything.
We're still working.
We are, so, which I just want to say, Rich, I think what we'll do, what result of this conversation, people want to work together. You suggested putting a group together. Perhaps you and working with Gary send out emails and plan to convene a working group, people who are interested, I think all of you may be, and really focus in on implementation of so many of the ideas that we've talked about.
Perfect. So watch your emails for an invitation to the stakeholders meeting for the new International Arbitration Centers of California. Thanks to Howard and Dan and Maria for the great presentation.